making the three-legged stool. I was already tickled beyond belief to be a cheerleader and co-producer of my pal Laura Dunn's documentary on Wendell Berry, Look and See. But imagine my elation when she asked if I would make a stool so that they could film it for the documentary, to underscore a section in which Mr. Berry, my all-time favorite writer, speaks in a moving way about people who make things, specifically artists. Quote, "We all come from divorce now. This is an age of divorce. Things that belong together have been taken apart, and you can't put it all back together again. What you do is the only thing that you can do. You take two things that ought to be together, and you put them back together. Two things, not all things. That's the way the work has to go. You make connections in your work. I reckon, I'm no filmmaker, but you'll put this film together by seeing how the parts of it belong together. The film, the made thing, becomes a kind of an earnest of your faith in and your affection for the great coherence that we miss and would like to have again. Well, that's what we do. We people who make things. If it's a stool, or a film, or a poem, or an essay, or a novel, or musical composition, it's all about that. Finding how it fits together, and fitting it together." Clearly, since he said stool first, Mr. Berry holds that art form above the lower or more base creations, such as poetry or music. Therefore, Laura thought it appropriate to film my hands and tools crafting a stool, and I do believe it may be the peak of my career in film, especially because my face is never seen. I love to make a three-legged stool, or anything with three legs, because a tripod cannot wobble. You can be as clumsy as, well, me, and screw up your legs 6 ways to Sunday, and that thing will still sit sturdily upon the ground. That is why I chose to craft just such a stool for Laura's film, since we were hustling a bit to get it done during post-production. I wanted to remove all the possible chances for error. I chose a piece of walnut slab that had been ravaged by termites, which had caused an organic pattern of hieroglyphs to be excavated that would normally qualify the wood for nothing but the firewood pile. The Swiss cheese quality of the wood's appearance, however, struck me as beautiful, so I cut the stool's seat to feature the damage. I'm also a big fan of the wedged through tenon, for if you get the joinery even close to decent, its permanence is idiot or nick-proof. Finally, I have recently been indulging in projects with curved details that require not so much accurate measuring as they do eyeballing for fairness. Laying out, measuring, cutting, and shaping wood with acuity are very enjoyable skills to learn, but then once those activities have been mastered and repeated enough times, cutting loose with some freehand techniques can provide a refreshing sense of liberation. With that in mind, I whipped up a leg design that I liked and I went to town. I'm sure that a person with talent could craft a nicer stool, but I'm afraid that this model, inspired by a call to illustrate Wendell Berry's language, will always be my favorite, as making it was one of the greatest privileges I've ever had on my bench. And I do hope you enjoy building it. Step 1. Choosing your wood. This is a really fun place to use weird or irregular items from the scrap pile, since you only need a 12-inch disc, and not necessarily even that, because you can use a piece of any size or shape within reason that will support the joinery and your fanny. I am using some gorgeous but difficult red eucalyptus for one stool's parts and a nifty slab of California myrtle for another, with eastern black walnut legs. Use your common sense to determine seat thickness. My smaller stool is 1 5/8 inches thick, and the myrtle slab will finish out at 2 inches. If your stool is for a toddler, a stuffed animal, Adam Scott, or any other supermodel, You can get away with a much thinner seat, but if it's for a professional wrestler or a Sasquatch, then you'll likely want to beef up your dimensions. Although good luck getting Bigfoot to sit still. They tend towards skittish in my experience. Step 2. Choose your shape, like a 12-inch disc, an octagon, or a weird heart, or a flower, who cares, and cut it out on the bandsaw or with a jigsaw. Lay out the locations for your three mortises by eyeballing the inset you want underneath the seat from the edge of the stool to the leg. Find the center of your seat and mark a straight line wherever it makes sense. Now you have a center line. I use a protractor and the center line to mark off the circle into thirds, or 120 degrees per mortise. No matter what shape your seat ends up as, it's good to use the circle system for layout if you want equidistant legs. Or not. Do as you please on a three-legged stool. Step 3. As wood contracts and expands with the humidity of the seasons, sometimes the cells can't keep up, and so cracks occur, known as checking. These most often happen along the grain, and they can be thin hairline cracks, or they can be wide gaps. Dealing with checks is a different conundrum every time. Depending on factors like comfort of use and aesthetics, I do my best to leave checks alone when I can, maybe just easing the edges so that they're not uncomfortable to touch. If I want to arrest any further cracking, I inlay a butterfly key, which is effective and also acute detail. However, in a tabletop, I maybe don't want to leave any crevices that'll collect gravy and subsequently be a drag to keep clean. In this case, I will make a mixture of two-part epoxy, microfiber filler, and sawdust from the wood I'm working on, or something contrasting if I want it to become a design detail, and fill the gap. This red eucalyptus had some small checks that were jagged and sharp, so I decided to fill them. The tape saves me a great deal of laborious cleanup. Mix in your filler and dust in equal parts until you like the color. Doing tests ahead of time can help with color matching. Once your paste feels like peanut butter, pack it into the crevice, being sure there are no voids or air bubbles left. A scraper makes quick work of cleanup after curing. Step 4. Next, I designed my legs, which in this case I had already done, but I wanted the Wendell Berry stool legs to be the right scale for my other two stools of disparate sizes. So I enjoined our trusty Jane to use the computer and scanner to scale the template to several other sizes, so that I could dial in the best one for each new stool. We'll focus on the eucalyptus stool from here on out for simplicity's sake. Step 5. For furniture legs, you generally want a hardwood that can put up with a person's weight and also get banged around a bit. Once again, I depend upon my eye to determine a good thickness for the leg. I like the thickness of the original leg, but I want to thin it down a bit for the slightly smaller version. So I mill my material until it looks right, which is at 1 3/4 inches. I use our planer, but you can also do this with a hand plane. Step 6. It's very important to align the leg design with the long grain so that you don't have short grain weak spots. Some of my walnut legs are guilty of this very deficit, but I make the top curve, or thigh, beefy enough to hopefully withstand breaking. The leg curves are marked from the template, but then I go back in and more anally dial in the tenon layout to ensure accuracy and squareness at the top of the curved form, so the joints will be friendly. Once I'm satisfied with my lines, I cut out the legs. Leave an extra 1/4 inch of tenon length to protrude from the mortise for later flush trimming. Step 7. I cut my tenons close to the line, then use a chisel and/or a shoulder plane to pair them just right. Once I like the tenons, I use them to lay out the mortises and the seat. In this case, I cut some excess off the tenon end, I had left extra length, and used the block to lay out my tenon locations. A marking knife is ideal in this application, as you want to get these mortises cut as perfectly as possible. All three joints should be identical, but I always seem to manage to screw something up just a bit, so I mark the tenons and their respective mortises as A, B, and C. Mark the top of the seat to make the joints as pretty as possible where folks can see them. If it's going to get ugly, and with red eucalyptus, it will get ugly, you want that to happen on the bottom side where it'll pass undetected. Once I have cut the lines in with a knife, I double down with a chisel to reinforce my clean layout and protect against tear out. Step 8. You can use a bit and brace, which is really fun, you should try it, or a hand drill, but I'm spoiled, so I drill out most of the waste from the mortise with a Forstner bit on the drill press. I chisel the rest, taking my time to keep my chisel 90 degrees to the surface of the seat. No matter how careful I am, this ornery eucalyptus begins to crumble in places, leaving me with some less than perfect topsides and ugly blowouts below. Don't ever work with red eucalyptus. Step 9. Once you are satisfied with the mortise and tenon joints, you'll want to cut a saw kerf in the tenons, into which a wedge will be driven once the joint is assembled. Mark out your kerf to a depth a quarter inch shy of your seat thickness. I cut mine with a Japanese pull saw. One kerf thickness is fine unless you want a thicker wedge for aesthetic reasons. Align your kerf and wedge perpendicular to the grain. If your kerf is parallel, you're likely to split the top. Drill a hole at the bottom of your wedge-kerf line to relieve the splitting force once the wedge is driven in. Ideally, I would cut the kerfs before shaping the legs. There should still be an eighth of an inch between the drilled bottom of the kerf and the leg tenon shoulder. Step 10. Time to shape the legs. To me, this is the funnest part. I draw a center line down the front of the leg, just eyeballing, and then freehand a reference curve along each of the two front edges, drawing it on each side of the leg. I taper the curve from nothing at the top corner to a width of a half inch or so at the protruding part of the thigh. These lines are just to give me a loose guideline as I remove material from both edges. I want them to be relatively symmetrical and fair, but it can differ from leg to leg since you can never really look at more than one leg at a time from head on. I start with a draw knife, but the grain is so ornery that I quickly turn to spokeshave and rasp. Remove material from both sides until you like the curves. Eventually, this godforsaken red eucalyptus would not get along with anything but a card scraper, and then I finally won the argument thanks to that noble scrap of thin steel. A little hand sanding, and these legs were ready to go to work. Step 11. I mill a scrap at the exact width of the tenon, length of the kerf, and at the length of the tenon minus 3/8 of an inch or so. I cut my wedges on the bandsaw at an angle of 3 to 4 degrees, then clean them up with a chisel so both sides of the wedge will be good glue surfaces. After I chamfer the wedge tips for friendly insertion, I make the thin end almost a 32nd inch less than the kerf width, which allows me to leave an 1/8 to 1/4 inch of space below the wedge when I drive it home, which gives the glue a place to go. I cut my wedges on the bandsaw, then clean them up with a chisel so both sides of the wedge will be good glue surfaces. I glue up the seat mortises and the leg tenons, gently knock them together, then glue up the wedges and tap them home. I wipe up my glue with a wet rag since I know there is sanding yet to come. Once the glue dries, I cut off the tenon tops with a flush-cut saw. Step 12. Now look at this mediocre work. That is called a gap. One of the best things about working with wood is that you can do a job this crappy and still get away with it. Cut some thin wedges in the appropriate species and tap them in with glue. Nobody's the wiser. Suck on that, eucalyptus. Step 13. Bringing the tenons flush with the seat is a great place to use a card scraper. If you try sanding an end-grain tenon, the long grain surrounding it will usually be abraded more quickly, resulting in an uneven surface. Scrape the tenon flush with the seat until it requires little to no sanding. Step 14. Now you can sand the stool for finish, starting with 120 and working up to 220. When you think it's close to done, wet the whole piece with water to raise any possible grain, then sand with 220 again. This red eucalyptus is such a pain in the keister that I end up needing the card scraper for most of the seed as well. I finished the stool with a couple of coats of tung oil.